you didn't get EXP when you killed enemies in 1.0. You had to pray that you procced EXP on like individual blocking to give you Sentinel level, which was like, like your shield was a class called Sentinel. I got to level 50 out of suffering and then stopped. And the servers weren't saving anymore at that point. Like you literally could go into your in room. If you looked under your bed, there were relic weapons under it, just completed relic weapons.
That's kind of cool
you to
though.
Just have. Heaven's Ward was only good for the story and like everything else was a disaster. You went from WoW refugee to 14 player back to WoW refugee the second you had anything critical to say. There was a content creator, Scott Zone. They came in, they were having a good time. They made one video criticizing the game and then they got attacked massively. But like Scott got harassed, doxxed. Everyone was saying the same things he was saying, but he was a WoW refugee. So it was sacrilege.
In 14, there definitely is this thing where you try and almost kind of like, I gotta step on eggshells around like the player base. It's like, it kind of is very puzzling in some sense. And I'll tell you why. Yeah, I think it's the first time I'm hearing about the details, which is, it makes me kind of sad. Very special guest today on the podcast of Unplugged, the weekly MMO podcast. We're here to discuss why Lalafells are the best race with Lalafell expert, Mr. Happy. But jokes aside, you know, I'll turn it over to you. Why don't you introduce yourself? Say your iconic line that everyone is here to kind of hear you say.
Everyone always says, say the line, Bart. Say the line every single time.
It's the same for 10 years, people want to hear it, you know?
Hey, everyone. Mr. Happy here.
There you go.
I produce content online largely for Final Fantasy 14 and other Square Enix products. I've been streaming on Twitch for just about that same period of time. And somehow I'm still here. So thank you.
Okay, that's a great intro. Which is a nice segue because you mentioned about, you know, how long you've actually been creating content for Square Enix games and in particular Final Fantasy 14. And then, dude, I'm telling you, when I first came to 14, you are actually one of the content creators I watched a lot because you had a lot of the old guides. And I remember doing like Eden's Raid and there was like a Happy Brembo strat. So that's where I found out about you, by the way. And then I looked through your YouTube. Dude, you have 4,500 videos over like, I don't know, the course of so many years. I think undoubtedly you have put out the most 14 content in YouTube. So, which kind of brings me to my first question, right? Like, what motivates you to create, you know, content for 14 after so many years, so many years?
Well, I mean, all going all the way back to like high school, I always just liked making videos for video games. I actually, the secret thing that's nowhere on the internet, I remember in high school, I made a video to, you know, Kingdom Hearts?
Yeah.
Like do you know like any? Okay, I wasn't sure like if you knew or if you just like know what it is.
Right, kind of. Right.
There's an encounter in the second game called Lingering Will.
Right.
And I took that music and I like applied it to like a live action fight scene between like a bunch of my friends. And so like I've been just wanting to create stuff. And then Final Fantasy just is an interest. So, you know, learned how to edit in high school, you know, when the time came to just decide, I want to do stuff for this game. It was just kind of natural.
Right.
You know, it was just two interests that lined up with each other.
Yeah. So that's how you started. But, you know, how do you get through, you know, I guess the years of, because content creation is not easy. And I know you're doing it kind of full time. Kind of tell me about it because, I've seen how the 14 directory is, right? Like there are lulls and there are times where it's good, but kind of tell me about, you know, the journey. It's been multi years for you. You're the most experienced in this kind of space. What keeps you going?
Honestly, just that I like Final Fantasy. It's kind of all it is. Like I think an important step was not doing it all the time. Like on YouTube, it's mostly Final Fantasy 14, but on the daily, it's like right now I play like once, twice a week. Like it's I'm not gonna sit here and like try to force myself to be on 14. So I have like a healthy game relationship with it. So producing content on it doesn't produce burnout. Mm. It doesn't produce any sort of major problem. And I also produce on multiple platforms. So if I want to just sit there and do a YouTube video, I can not stream for the day and work for 16 hours on a video. But if I don't want to work on a YouTube video, I have my live streams every day. So there's just these checks and balances to make sure that no one aspect of it, I'm just like, I don't want to do that. I don't even want to see it. I don't want to. You know, I just so that and there's regular news. So it's not something that even when there's breaks, there's still something to talk about. Right. There's still eventually news or something coming down the line. So,
right.
It's just a consistent thing that I can enjoy without needing to dedicate every waking moment to it.
Right. That's really smart. And kind of speaking about your journey, right? I actually looked through your oldest videos possible on YouTube. And dude, I must just say like, there's some level of you know, it being really inspiring to see a young Mr. Happy in that different bedroom from, you know, your current backdrop. And yeah, it's inspiring because you started so young and, you know, just to see the transition over the years is, I think to a lot of aspiring content creators out there, that's kind of inspirational that, you know, you put in the hours, you put in the hard work, and now you're recognized as one of the biggest in the space. But kind of tell me, when you first started, you made like SimCity videos, Smite videos. When was that, you know, turning point for you when you realized that you wanted to do like 14 videos?
I remember the first post that Yoshi P put up on the forum. So I had played 1.0. I was one of the first level 50s on the server. It was literally in college, still after class, 10 hours a day, praying to get EXP. Because that's it. You didn't get EXP when you killed enemies in 1.0. You had to pray that you procced EXP on like individual. Yeah, it was like character level you got from killing monsters and job level and class level you got from like blocking could give you Sentinel level, which was like, like your shield was a class called Sentinel back then. It was all sorts of like wild, weird stuff.
Wait, but you like, enjoyed too much doing that. You enjoyed the game loop.
I got to level 50 out of suffering and then stopped because there was nothing to do at level 50.
Right. So
It was like, yeah, it was really not good. It was a bad time. But that meant that when I heard they were going to be reworking it, doing a Realm Reborn, that was of major interest because I played Final Fantasy 11 for 7 years. That's why I played 1.0 in the first place. And then I really wished I liked it and I didn't. And they were going to be reworking it. So it was really Yoshi P's first post where it's like a picture of like him fighting a chimera on as like a paladin. It looks way better than the game looks right now. It's like, it's way like CGI oversells the game. Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a concept, but it's like the graphics like are like leagues above. Like even the graphic update I think we're getting doesn't look as good as whatever that picture was. But it was kind of that moment where at the very least I knew I would play it. Then when I started making those like little videos, there's some that are deleted. There's like League of Legends in there that I think was deleted. There's Minecraft like jump puzzle videos or something. There's horror games. There's like a whole bunch of stuff. And it was just like, they started announcing news and I was like, well, I'm already making videos on this other stuff. I'll just make a video about the news because, you know, maybe the Realm Reborn will be good. And that was kind of it. Like I started getting a little bit of traction here or there with each video. And then I lost my job because the company that bought out the startup I was working at got rid of like 2/3 of the company. Right. I was among the 2/3. So now I had all the time in the world too.
Wait,
so
how many years ago was that? Like that incident?
2013. 2013.
Wow, you've been doing it full time in a long time. Amazing.
Yeah, I lost that job in March of 2013, I think. Right. And I started making 14 videos, I think, in January of 2013.
Wow.
But then like after March, it was like, you know, full ham.
Right.
I suppose.
But latching on to what you said earlier, you played 11 and then you played 1.0. Now, when I was a Sprout, everyone made me watch this video about how horrible 1.0 is. But from your perspective, is 11 better than 1.0?
Yes.
Oh, really?
And I'm not like one of those 11 vets that talks about how it's the greatest MMO of all time. I've really have moved on from those days, like in such a way, like, oh, World of Warcraft. Oh, let's just play a real MMO. Like, that's how all the 11 people were. All the MMOs that weren't WoW were just like in that jealous fit of rage. Like my game's so much better than that.
We had the cool kids, the people who really understand MMOs. Yeah,
we really understood it way better than everyone else. That's how everybody thought. I'm sure it was like that for like EverQuest and like all the other ones too, but like to be fair, WoW was EverQuest. It's right. Just popular EverQuest.
So tell me about the day, because like, you know, I can only relive it through YouTube videos about the day, you know, the servers went down and, you know, a Realm Reborn trailer was released. Like, were you playing 1.0 at a point in time, or did you just watch like the trailer get released, and how did you feel on the day?
I watched the trailer get released, so I had a very touch and go relationship with 1.0 where I played it when it first came out, didn't touch it for a while, played it when Ifrit was first released, didn't play it for a while, came back when the Relic Quests were introduced, didn't play it for a while. And then when they did this, they had 1.23, but they had 1.23 A, B, and C. And C was like nothing else is saving.
Wait, what
and
that's is when they A, started B, and like, C? That's new. So like, how does that work? Balance
1.23. A, 1.23A was Riven Road. So that would have been Nail. That was the actual finale of the story. 1.23B, they started having the Aetherites around the world be drained and void monsters were showing up around them. And then 1.23B, the city states were straight up invaded by like level 100, like chimeras and like fake versions of Nail Van Darnas and stuff like that.
Right.
And the servers weren't saving anymore at that point. Like you literally could go into your in-room. And if you looked under your bed, there were relic weapons under it, just completed relic weapons.
That's kind of cool,
you to
though.
Just have.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a cool thing by the devs. Okay, cool. And when the trailer released, like, what was it like in the community? Like, what was the sentiment?
There was a lot of emotion, I'd say, because the big thing was seeing Bahamut. Everybody was trying to figure out what Dalamud was. And even though it was kind of obvious if you were doing the story, seeing Bahamut that kind of size, and I mean, there's a reason why that trailer is as emotional for people who haven't even played 1.0 as it is for people who did. It was just a promise of something whole new, like just a complete departure, and right. It was something that everybody really wanted because nobody wanted 1.0 anymore. You have the few people who did. They're like, oh, you know, 1.23, you know, if they just like, you know, release some more content for No.
Right.
That's not a good idea.
And were there, so I assume like, okay, so people were optimistic, like it's a brand new phase for the game, but did everyone, you know, who churned, who kind of gave out 1.0 return immediately, or is it kind of like a trickle of like, oh, the game is better now with Yoshi-P and you slowly see people just joining in 2.0?
I'd say even going into 1.23, the population considerably went up. There was obviously most of the people playing knew what they were playing wasn't going to matter. Like, it's not that it wasn't going to matter, but like it wasn't going to be the same game. But you saw like 1.0 was like this, and then like 1.23 was like just a little bit back. And so those people were really excited. But when it came to Realm Reborn, I mean, it was just, there were four beta tests and two of them weren't public. The third one you could post screenshots, and the fourth one I think people were finally allowed to share gameplay of. And everyone was kind of just nervously watching. Like the people who played 1.0 wanted to play the beta, but everyone else was just like, I don't know about that after seeing 1.0. You right. sure not you're gonna really you're gonna try again? Okay, that's pretty notable, but I'll wait and see, because 1.0 is not good. Not good.
Right. And let me pick your brain. So like when 2.0 released, let's call it like it's been a few months. How was the population like NA versus Japan? Because my gut feel is NA is bigger now, but back then, was Japan a bigger population?
I don't really remember much discussion about individual regions. Because you got to remember that NA back then was kind of tainted to a sense in regards to how the population was distributed. While there were European servers, the data centers for Europe were just in North America. They didn't actually have a physical location.
Interesting. Okay.
So no matter where EU people were playing, they were playing with NA ping. So all the EU people were coming and playing on NA servers because they had friends in North America that were playing at the right time. So I don't know. I'd say it's almost West versus East, and more so than just NA versus Japan.
Right.
And that, but I think NA's always had the larger population even before factoring that in.
Interesting.
But Japan's has always been pretty good. I just know that Japan was really split, and I think still is fairly split between Dragon Quest X and Final Fantasy 14 in terms of population.
Right.
Dragon
like,
Quest
even
X
now.
does. Yeah, even now I think they're pretty well split between the two. There's, and then I think nowadays there's more overlap between the two, but I think back then it was like more of a choosing to play, like which one to play kind of deal.
Right. And was there like a particular moment in 2.0 where you felt like, all right, this game is back, and like is there a particular instance or like something you did in the game where you felt like, all right, this game is back on track?
Actually, no. 2.0 was a lot of seeing what they were going to do with an MMO after release, and they kind of struggled and fumbled a good bit with that. And I say they fumbled really all the way into Heavensward, like in through Heavensward, to be honest.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. So like the first patch was delayed like, you know, 2 months, like it was a 5 month patch cycle right out the gate. And all there was, I mean, imagine like what we have now, you know, essentially it was, you know, we had Wanderer's Palace and what's it called? Aim to Poor Keep is your two max level dungeons.
Okay.
And you had hard mode primals for the relic weapon, and then you had coil. And that was it. There were no treasure maps yet. There were no, like, I mean, you could fate grind for levels, but there was nothing else for you to do unless you were a crafter or a gatherer, just leveled everything.
Right.
So they kind of struggle. And tomes. And you, the tome cap was only 300 then too. So,
so
very, very different time.
Okay, that's really interesting. And you mentioned, like, they kind of fumbled even through Heavensward. And I'm very curious about that because I think as a Sprout, I couldn't quite play Heavensward like when it was current. When I played it, it was like years ago, you know. But I remember vividly when Heavensward came out, and you know, I was playing WoW just like most other MMO folks. And one of the things that came across on my YouTube feed, I remember, was Ishgard's kind of night OST. And I vividly remember, like, the video was just like snow falling, and the soundtrack was great. And I was like, this MMO had something interesting. Like, the soundtracks is really good and it's better than WoW, and I don't think anyone can dispute that. But I never played 14, but that video kind of stayed with me for some reason. I always felt like, okay, this game is interesting. I might check it out one day, right? But anyway, fast forward, like, that's what got me in. But I wanted to ask you, so going from A Realm Reborn to Heavensward, which is the first proper expansion, if A Realm Reborn was kind of like Yoshi-P kind of repairing and kind of like putting band-aids on stuff, Heavensward was when he really first was able to stamp his mark on the game. How did it feel from a veteran's perspective, like the first expansion ever for this game?
Heavensward was a real mixed bag. It all comes down to who you ask and what they did content-wise in Heavensward. Because A Realm Reborn was them trying to figure out, how do we design raid bosses and how do we do difficulty? Like, you know, Savage Check and Coil was just an experiment to see what it's like to have two raid difficulties, and, you know, trying to parse the feedback about people doing fates. And so Heavensward was supposed to be kind of the first major culmination of a lot of that stuff. First job updates, you know, major rebalances, and their first attempt at a dual structure of, you know, difficulties in raid. And I don't think they landed anything but the main story on expansion's release. Now, I did say that I didn't say Soken fumbled. So you're hearing the OST and thinking that he never fumbled.
Yeah, you had to clarify that, else people will cancel you, you know. So, like, yeah, okay, no, just kidding.
Yeah. But Heavensward's release, I genuinely was afraid the game was going to 1.0 itself again for a not insignificant period of time. They tried a few things with crafting and gathering that, like, stuck with some, stuck with, didn't stick with others. You remember how in the start of Cataclysm, they tried to go back to making it so, like, healing mattered more, CC mattered more, and how they kind of, like, abandoned it 2 weeks later?
Yeah.
that laugh. Yeah, it's like,
it's bad memories, but yeah, okay.
Imagine if it took them, like, four whole major patches to, like, really pick up what problems they had put down before making the adjustment. It's as if the start, and to be fair, some people would have loved the start of Cataclysm, just like some people reminisce about Gordius, about how it was the greatest.
Oh, it sounds like Arthur's. I think I heard that many times, but okay, yeah, go on.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, Gordius is the best tier ever. It's not. But it's kind of like that, where it was like, if you were not in that upper echelon that was able to do everything in the game, there was nothing to do other than the story. And, like, it just gradually got better over Heavensward, but it wasn't really till 0.4 where it kind of was, like, all the way repaired. The anima weapon was scuffed because of Gordius. People couldn't clear the third fight in Gordius, and people didn't want to clear the fourth fight. Thordin was murdering groups as well, because even the casual, like, mid-core groups couldn't beat it. Like, okay. Yeah, it was people couldn't do, like, dive bombs in Thordin. Like, even though I think Miz put out the video where she's like, if you stand in a spot that looks exactly like this anywhere around the room, it'll miss every time. But, like, that didn't save people from, like, actually knowing how to do the fight. Like, it just got them past one thing that people just couldn't do with their eyeballs.
Right.
So it was, yeah. They had Diadem, which failed, like, thrice, started in Heavensward. It was just so many things that didn't work. Like, I always say, if people think Endwalker wasn't good as you were playing through it, Heavensward was only good for the story. And, like, everything else was a disaster.
Right. And we might be jumping ahead of ourselves here, because, okay, so I'm going to take a totally wrong, like, different detour from what I sent you, because, like, you are essentially a historian when it comes to 14. And I'm just going to, like, ask you in chronological order, and we're gonna go through this. And as a YouTuber, you understand where I'm going as well, because I already see an angle here on the video. So yeah, yeah. So like, it's more like, I mean, for me, I think a lot of my audience, like there are a lot of folks who came from WoW, right? So, and that's where I started. So it's kind of interesting to just kind of pick your brains on how the game evolved, because when I played Heavensward, it was like, oh shit, it's so great compared to A Realm Reborn, which is the MSQ version. It's like, oh shit, finally, like, things are happening. And, you know, a lot of people have been speaking about the MSQs for A Realm Reborn. So, like, Heavensward was, like, the first time I felt like, oh, this game, like, the MSQ is really picking up. So, I see it through rose-tinted glasses, right? And obviously, you see it through when the content was current. So, that's interesting. But would you say the population is bigger in Heavensward versus A Realm Reborn?
I think we have the numbers that it was about the same.
Oh, really?
Okay. I think it was, if I recall correctly, the average concurrent logins during A Realm Reborn and Heavensward were between like 530 and 580,000 at their peak. Or I think the Lucky Bancho, I think the Lucky Bancho's estimate of like monthly subs or people who are subscribed to the game or active, whatever metric they use. Yeah, it was around the 500 to 600,000 mark. But if I recall correctly, there were more patches in Heavensward that were lower than A Realm Reborn, because A Realm Reborn kind of carried the hype of a remade game, and Heavensward was kind of the pavement setting.
Right.
You know, like that excitement wasn't there anymore. So it was genuinely about whether or not people were having a lot of fun.
Right.
And there were just a lot of people that weren't. I mean, I think 14's always kind of carried sub number wise by the social people who just want to log in and be social so than engage in the content.
Yeah.
I think they hard carried Heavensward more than Endwalker by far. Yeah.
Okay. So question. So it sounds like when Heavensward launched, and just like any MMOs, expansion launched as a peak, but then people churn and, you know, they couldn't kind of retain players going into, you know, the subsequent patches. Sounds like that. And then obviously from my perspective, which is, you know, you play a Sprout, you do the MSQs, you go into Stormblood, and, you know, you hear different things, right? Because as a Sprout, you play MSQs, like Stormblood is a dip. And then you hear people like Arthur telling me how Stormblood is the best thing since sliced bread. So yeah, like, how is Stormblood for, you know, current content, and how is it like?
See, now Heavensward started on a good note because everyone really liked the MSQ. There were no login issues, and 14 has a habit of alternating expansions with login issues, it seems, because A Realm Reborn, bad issues. Heavensward, fine. Stormblood, the worst it's ever been. Shadowbringers, perfectly fine. Endwalker, yikes.
Right.
So means Dawn Trail should be a good launch as far as I'm concerned. So Stormblood started off with not only was the game kind of like barely working, but on top of that, people just weren't as into the story. And that's been something that's been a recurring thought even for Sprouts going through. They're like, wow, after Heavensward, I don't really like Stormblood as much, you know? But the content in Stormblood was refined. So it's the other way around from Heavensward. So it's people like me who did the content who look back fondly, and people who only did the MSQ who say it's not as good.
Right. And what does that mean for sub numbers? Because it sounds like the end game stuff is better, but how does it translate into player numbers? Just from a gut feel.
I think it was, I'm trying to remember, because I want to do gut feel, but we have the numbers. Mm-hmm. Like, they're there. Like, Lucky Bancho has been doing the census for like such a long time now. I want to say it was higher than the last two. It was like in the 600,000 to 700,000 range, like maybe just like upper 600,000s kind of at its peak at that point. And it definitely felt more lively on the regular. There were still some ideas that only kind of landed with some people, but have retroactively been very popular. I mean, Ultimate was introduced in Stormblood. UCOB, which has now been beaten, I think, in every humanly way possible as of the last couple of weeks.
I saw your video.
Not just Enraged. They went and did one neuro as well.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah. They saw a comment under my tweet. They were like, Sindolf tweeted, like, when's one neuro? And they're like,
I guess you'll do that, yeah.
They did it. They did it like a day later. So it's literally been beaten like every way possible. Yeah, it had a Eureka as well, which was really divisive on content, especially Pacos. But nowadays, there's still 30 to 40 people in an instance at any given time in Ether.
Right.
So
you mentioned it's divisive. And why is that so? Because I think like right now, at least for Endwalker, when you look back on it, everyone's talking about like, hey, we need like, you know, more of such content like Eureka. And you mentioned it's divisive at that point in time. Like, why?
So the entire premise of Eureka was to bring elements of Final Fantasy XI into 14 and to create kind of this content island that was not really like the rest of the game. And fact of the matter is, not everyone wants to grind monsters to get chain bonuses to level up, you know, little at a time. And it was also missing some things that I think 11 crucially learned it needed early on, like level syncing.
Yeah.
Specifically in 11, for those who don't know, you can sync to your party leader's level.
Oh.
And thus, if you're level like 75 and somebody's level 10, you sync down to 10 and you'll gain experience as if you were level 10 and have stats as if you were level 10.
But when you gain XP, does it prorate back to like percentage wise, like the level gains from 75 onwards?
At that point, there was no percentage wise. You gained 300 EXP a kill from level 1 to level 75. Nowadays, that's not how it works, but that's how it worked back then. You were gaining 300 a kill, like pretty much regardless of what level you were. Right. So that meant that it was value. If you saw a level 20 party that could kill mobs quick or that, you know, needed you, you could be like, all right, I'll go join a level 20 party.
Right.
Eureka didn't have that. So if you were level 20 and your friend was level 1, you were like, good luck, pal.
Okay, cool.
There was like the lessons they didn't learn that like 11 had already learned. And so there was just, it was just a lot of like people outpacing each other and friend groups getting broken up, like in terms of like being able to play together. So it was just a lot of people weren't a big, especially Pagos. That's really where that problem accelerated the most.
Right. And obviously, like you mentioned, the end game is kind of more refined. They've, you know, taken some lessons from Heavensward. It's a bit more refined. And going into Shadowbringers like teaser, let's not talk about launch. Let's not talk about when there was a massive influx to, you know, 14 in Shadowbringers yet. Like the first FanFest, the teaser, the trailers, what was the vibe like on the ground?
The vibe for the teasers and everything, that this would have been for the FanFest at the Rio for Heavensward, very small venue and a very big learning lesson for Square's NA teams. Wait, hang on.
Rio, like as in Brazil?
No, well, they call it the Rio in Vegas. Right.
Okay.
It's a hotel called the Rio. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Sorry. It's because they have the Rio, Paris. Right. They have like all of these like other country names. Yeah. Like all these other cities. And it was like the first day registration broke. It was a 7-hour line to get your ticket, essentially.
So you queue up for your tickets.
Yeah.
Like physically.
You had to pick it up, basically. Like you bought them online, but you didn't print them out and bring them with you. You had to pick them up at the venue. So they could ID check you, basically, to make sure that it was you who purchased it.
When you buy online, was it like balloted or like, was it like mass people trying to get a limited supply?
Mass people.
Okay.
This was the first time with the lotto system. This last FanFest. Yeah. So it was first come, first serve.
Right.
Pretty handily.
And so you had to queue up.
7 hours registration. Yeah.
Wow.
And it broke. So it took 7 hours of standing to get a ticket. And then there was an after party, but only a few people were going to the after party that they were hosting there. And that was perfectly fine. Then the next day, we had we got into the room and they sat us down and we watched the trailer for Heavensward and 2.4 trailer. I think it also just come out like that morning. But then the actual event, everything, it was way worse, like line wise, than I think any other FanFest has been. The merch line, all but one register, like broke. So the merch line was like 8 hours to get like a plush. And then, you know, if you wanted to do the battle challenges, they had Odin as a battle challenge there. And that was like a 2-hour line. And then they had like a dungeon one and like an alliance PvP one. And like, the odds of you seeing and doing more than two or three of those things in that weekend was like nigh impossible. Right. And if you wanted to do merch, one of your entire days was likely to be gone.
Okay.
So it was rough. It was a big learning curve, not enough space, not enough preparation, the way it was structured. Like they learned a lot. It got a lot better on most of the other fan fests afterwards.
But what was the mood like when you guys saw the teaser for the first time, like Shadowbringers teaser?
Oh, it was not. Our teaser was probably the most tease style. We genuinely felt teased when we got our trailer, because it was just like a really short version of the Warrior of Light walking onto the bridge with the like Krace Felger looking dragon on there. And then it was like he put on the armor and then the battle. It was like a minute and 20 seconds. It ends the same way with the helmet coming down. But it was like, we got nothing out of it because like all the details from like 2.5 weren't in there and like the extended scenes weren't there. Just there's a lot of stuff that just wasn't in there.
Right.
So we were just like, oh, that's crazy. But it was, everyone was just excited because it was FanFest more so than like what we actually got to see, because we didn't really get to see a whole lot. You know, NA has always been kind of the least exciting. I know it's where they announced like everything initially, but it's also where there's the least information.
Right.
We learned that very quickly. Like, what did we learn? Like, what's happening in this expansion?
Right. Okay. And eventually when you guys saw the full trailer, and I guess like review of the job, the new job, I guess, like what was the mood like? Like, do people feel like, oh, it's going to be way better than Stormblood? Like, you know, what's the sentiment like?
It set a really unfair precedent for the rest of the expansions. When we got a race and three jobs right after getting Ninja, like we literally got Ninja as like these fan fests were happening, because 2.4, I think, released the week after EU Fan Fest, and EU Fan Fest was a week after NA.
Right.
It was only a week.
That's between really close, the two of them. Okay.
I literally, Soken was on my plane. I was flying from Vegas to New Jersey, and he was flying to New Jersey to fly to Europe. And so he was on my plane. Dude was out like a light. He was just like,
that's rough, dude.
Yeah, because he was just flying nonstop. And so he wasn't really used to that. They hadn't been doing anything like that up to that point. So it was, everyone was really excited about all the job details we were getting. We learned about Dark Knight at EU. We didn't learn about any jobs at NA. We just got a Batman shirt. And then, you know, at JP, I think it was, they came out with like the machine, like the CEO came out with a gun and just held it to Yoshi P and said, reveal the other job.
Okay.
And then Astra, it was a lot of hype around the jobs and the race and going to Ishgard, because all the 1.0 people had been teased Ishgard for 3 years, 4 or 5 years, basically, at that point.
Right.
So.
And okay, cool. So like lots of hype, you know, from the fanfares, the full trailer came out. And when the game finally launched, how was like Shadowbringers launch like? Was it massive?
Shadowbringers launch was something. Something else.
Right.
It wasn't the craziness, because that really started late in Shadowbringers. And that is like not comparable to any, like the Endwalker stuff that would come later is not really comparable to Shadowbringers, but community expectation after Stormblood was really high for Shadowbringers. The people who didn't like the story were hoping for a better one. The people who liked the content were hoping for more of that. So everyone was kind of on that same level of wanting to, by the way, I was talking about the Heavensward, because you mentioned FanFest. So I went back to the first FanFest in that discussion. I just want that to be clear.
Yeah, you better clarify such things before you get canceled. Yeah, okay.
I was aware that you asked. That's why I said we got to go back to the first one to talk about FanFest, because it was a very different experience. And so, with the Shadowbringers, there was a lot of expectation, more than there had been. The previous two was like, okay, let's see what they're actually going to do. And Heavensward Stormblood was, I hope the content's better. And then Shadowbringers like, okay, they've got most of it down. Now just like level it all out. And that's pretty much what Shadowbringers did. So it met that same. Obviously, you know, dev delays happened during Shadowbringers. You know, that's not in their control in any capacity. But all the same, came out in Shadowbringers, I think, will still be a good memory for everyone, both thinking back to the start with the FanFest and the trailers, and also all throughout.
Right. And the moment, you know, 5.0 was out, people did the MSQs. Was it like, oh, this is the best MSQ since sliced bread? Because obviously the 5.0 moment is iconic. Like, what was people's reactions to the story?
You had the occasional, I liked Heavensward better dissident.
Oh, really?
For the most part. Oh, yeah. Still to this day, there's people who definitely like the more personal nature of. It's a different storytelling method, different, you know, character structure, all that stuff. But no, Shadowbringers was definitely a sliced bread moment. Definitely like that. I mean, you'd be on Twitter for 5 minutes. I dare you to type in Emmett Selk with safe search turned off. I dare you and see what happens. Yeah, that's Astinian too, but besides the point,
right.
Heavensward has left a lasting impression. I'm sorry, Shadowbringers, now I'm getting mixed up, left a lasting impression on pretty much everybody who played it.
Right. So let's talk about before, you know, everyone flocked to play 14, right? How was like the post-expansion patches like 5.1, 5.2? How was it like?
Everything went kind of okay until the vid struck. And that's when we got their big content delay, and it kind of, it forced people to criticize kind of the way they had changed certain release structures. A great example is going back to A Realm Reborn. The relic weapons were introduced in 2.2. It was a really weird patch for it, but it meant that people got into that grind fest. The people who really wanted a grind fest got into that grind fest fairly early. In Heavensward, the animal weapon was 4.15. Because they were like, oh, we didn't have one in 4.0. So just, I'm sorry, 3.15. It's all these numbers. Can't throw away. It's 8:16 in the morning. I can't throw around numbers this much. That one came early. And then Eureka started in 0.25. Mm. But then when we got to Shadowbringers, the 0.25 step was like an hour long. And then an extreme trial if you wanted to farm like artifact gear, like dieable artifact gear. So like things like that definitely came under a lot of scrutiny in the subsequent patches, and the way that they were starting to deliberately break apart and pace patches was making people impatient because of the dev delays. So that was the big problem that kind of arose from that, and something that's still criticized now with the way they split things apart,
right?
Just making us wait a long time for not a lot of things, I suppose. But everything that came out in Shadowbringers, even at its like worst criticized point, was pretty well enjoyed. Most of the EX trials were well received. Most of the raids were well received. Like, yeah, Fighter 2, you know, like E7 wasn't popular. You know, that's a common thing.
Yeah.
And people were 50-50 on Bozia as well. But overall, I think they kind of, again, they hit the nail on the head, you know, and at this point they were building on so many systems, treasure maps, crafting, gathering. We had, you know, role quests, we had crafting quests and gathering quests and tribes that covered all the different bits and bobs, and like, there's the few misses that are in Shadowbringers were not the end of the world. Most people don't remember them for not having something. They remember Shadowbringers for what it did do. Mm. And that was a lot of good things.
Right. And let's talk about the moment when, I don't know, like 14 just exploded and a lot of people attribute it to Asmon Gold's effect. But my memory of that, it wasn't like that, because before Asmon Gold played, like I already hear people playing this game like, oh, hey, you should check out this MMO. And that's why I started, because there were friends in the MMO circle that were already chatting about, hey, this game is what you should play, because, you know, Shadowlands obviously was in the gutters. So like, what was your rare collection? Like as a veteran, you've seen all the expansions. What was it like? Like what, can you remember, like, was there a trigger and how did it happen?
I think myself and many others would probably say that if Asmongold wasn't the trigger, he was so well timed that we wouldn't have noticed otherwise. If he hadn't like done it at that same time. So it's kind of a tough call. I would say the game was on a general like incline every like from the start of Stormblood onward, outside of, you know, in between patch dips, whatever. But it was on an incline regardless at that point. But it just took a spike when all the content creators who hadn't played it before tried it for the first time. The spike was big in game, but I think a lot more people noticed the spike out of game, because a lot of content creators kind of rose up in the 14 community at around that time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like, it's the popular thing, let me do it. There was kind of like a lot of people just got genuinely into it because it spread like wildfire like that. So I do actually think it is a content creator related spike in popularity, and that everyone kind of reaped the benefits from that, whether you were already playing and already creating content, or if you were someone who is kind of discovering a new thing. If anything, it's a little bit tougher now, because I feel like a lot of people came in at that time and thought that that's how it was going to be. And now we have like low times like this, and that's where a lot more people kind of struggle, because they want that high, like that dopamine hit that we had then. It's like, it's not realistic.
Right.
So,
and that's why I actually wanted to talk to you.
Only negative.
Like, I think you hit the nail on the head, which is like, it was, and I've said this to many people. I said that summer where everyone was playing 14, it was like a perfect storm. It's like a magical moment in history where anyone can be a 14 content creator. You know, like thanks Blizzard. But no, I mean, you were right. There was a massive interest in just seeing people react to kind of MSQs, and I think, you know, that summer was just magical because everyone was playing 14. Everyone and their farm animals and their pet goldfish, like everyone was playing 14. And how was it like being a veteran and you have done, you know, all these content all the way to, you know, what was current? What did that mean for you from a, you know, career perspective? Because obviously you have been doing it, you know, for full time. What did it mean for you like that summer?
You know, I actually like to say that I didn't try to make it much more of a career thing for me. So a lot of people were infatuated with the idea of either being there or influencing other people's playthroughs. And having played 14 for as long as I have, having streamed for as long as I have, I've seen both sides of that. I've seen the side where it's like really endearing and welcoming and fun. And then I've seen the sides of it where people are kind of possessive of the experience. And I know that people have now seen that side of it because I've watched as people have gotten through the content that they thought was like the birth of something new for their channel.
Yeah.
And then they're done with it. And so are the people who are in there for it. So like, I was more worried for the new people coming in than anything else. Yeah. I knew that what I did, it meant more people would see my videos. Mm. It wasn't like I wasn't going to start changing the content that I did, or I wasn't going to start like trying to make the WoW people that were coming in my content.
Yeah.
You know, what they were doing in the game, like maybe once or twice I did something and I was just like, you know what? I don't want to make their new experience my content. Mm. I just want them to have a good time.
Yeah.
And as long as that happens, that's all that matters to me.
Honestly,
it didn't change much for me. I just kept doing the things I was already doing, but because more people were playing, more people were seeing it. Mm. And that was good enough for me. You know, I didn't need anything else from it.
Right. And, you know, obviously like the influx of players was massive. And then let's kind of talk about the point at which they joined, and I don't even remember whether it was current. I think it was 5.5, right? When like Asmongold started playing. Is that 5.5?
I think it was 5.5, right. But I think the surge started happening a little before that. Mm. I think it was during 5.4 cycle,
right,
where I think maybe Asmongold started playing there, but like everyone really piled on from 5.5 onward because it was like at that point the expansion was nigh.
Right.
You know, like, oh, there's no more patches. So this is it. I play this and now I'm good.
Right. And how was it like? Because obviously in the 14 community, there are people who at that point in time were all sprouts and they're new, right? And then there are people who have been here forever. So what was the community perception? I think it was generally receptive, but kind of talk to me like the two different camps, like, you know, how's it like?
Oh, you know what the other camp is. You know,
enough.
You know what the other camp. The other camp is, who are these WoW players?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I definitely thought that too.
They're going to ruin it for everyone. Get back into your Call of Duty Xbox lobbies. Yeah, joke's on you. It's on Xbox. It's on Xbox in 3 days.
Yep.
So there you go. It was mostly receptive. Everyone likes have. I don't think that most people, they want someone to share in like the thing that they like, right? It was when you had people come in who were new, who in any way tried to criticize the game for the better. Then they became, suddenly you went from WoW refugee to 14 player back to WoW refugee the second you had anything critical to say.
Right.
There was a content creator. It's been a while, so my name recollection is not great. Mm. They came in, they were having a good time. They made one video criticizing the game and then they got attacked massively.
Wait.
And it put them in a bad mental health state and they stopped doing content altogether.
As in like a WoW player, like who did 14?
Yeah.
Wait, really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wait, I'm curious.
It's been a while.
Now,
Scott. Yeah, it was Scott. That's right. Yeah, Scott Zone. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think I saw the video before.
Yeah.
Like he made,
okay. I've always said that was such a huge loss for the 14 community. Like he took that as an opportunity to better himself. I've seen him pop in streams and on socials from time to time. And I still bring this up because it was, I think, a worse example than anything that happened to Asmund. Because like Asmund was so big he didn't care. Like if somebody came up and was like being annoying, he's like, who is this?
Yep.
Who is this ant?
That's a fair statement.
But
yeah,
but like Scott got harassed, doxxed, and then he like, you know, he went on kind of like an emotional like moment for him, and that got him, I think, banned or something on like one, I don't remember if it was on Twitch or YouTube, or he got banned somewhere because he was like trying to defend himself, trying to react back, and it just didn't work, and it just forced him. It was an awful loss for the 14 community because he had been making great content up to that point.
And I want to kind of talk about this. Yeah. And obviously I've heard about this, but now that you're jogging my memory, I kind of vaguely remember this. So, obviously he criticized the game. Like, what did he criticize the game for?
little like same things that 14 players were criticizing the game for, like, oh, our glamour system isn't flexible enough. I wish we had something like transmogs and World of Warcraft.
I am surprised it would be so much easier for that.
That's among other things right. that he said, but like it would, that's my point. Everyone was saying the same things he was saying, but he was a WoW refugee. So it was sacrilege all of a sudden.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like some fights are too long or like a little too long. It was like, whatever. Like, this is not things that you get upset. You're like, oh, you know, I disagree and move on. But like on everywhere else on the internet, you can't disagree and you have to be right or wrong. So people get crazy about that stuff.
I have thought a lot about this, which is the idea about like whether you're authentic as a content creator, like whether you are willing to kind of stick your neck out and just say what you really think, right? And I feel like in 14, there definitely is this thing where you try and almost kind of like, oh, I gotta step on eggshells around like the player base. It's like, it kind of is very puzzling in some sense. And I'll tell you why. It's puzzling because there's such a big, almost like a contrast, even like a dichotomy when you first come into 14 and like you are kind of embraced as a Sprout, right? And the community feels really wholesome. Now, I'm not saying that everyone is responsible for like Scott's incident. There's obviously that vocal minority. So just to be clear, so I won't get canceled, like it's that vocal minority, right? And just to repeat again, it's the vocal minority. Okay, so anyway, just taking it a bit further. But point is,
three times.
Yeah. Just to be sure, three times is the charm, you know? So in case people don't register that, like I'll put the timestamp and they can see the part where I put the disclaimer in. But jokes aside, there's such a big, I feel like there's a big contrast, right? As content creators, I think like for example, in Scott's incident, he probably felt like, oh, this community is like, you know, very embracing, welcoming. And then the vocal minority got to him. And I want your take on this, because I feel like on some levels, it's also the content creators. How do I put it? As a content creator, you also expect flack, right? And to what extent is it, you know, like he was just being called out? I don't know how to put it. Like, was he being ganged up? Or was it more like it was just normal stuff as a content creator that you take criticism for? Like, you know, I could put a video to say, hey, I wish Criterion had better rewards, and then obviously I'll get flack, right? And that's very normal, and I accept that that's part of being a content creator. But that Scott incident, was it like that? Or was it something more serious?
He got doxxed.
Okay. That's serious.
He got doxxed.
Yeah,
that's definitely
yeah.
not. That's yeah, across that's, the line. That's definitely yeah. not the norm.
That's
yeah.
across the line for sure. That's unfortunate, dude. Like, I don't want to say. I mean, hearing that, that's a pity. Almost disappointing to hear, honestly. As a content creator, yeah.
I'm not that surprised. I mean, here you got it. When I was first starting out, I had people who were doxing me and harassing me on the regular.
Really?
So I'm not that surprised. Yeah, that's a whole story. Like, I don't even have to name people, but like
why? I don't understand.
A whole thing.
I don't understand why though. Like, why? What? Like,
because I'm me.
But dude, like the thing is, what do you expect content creators to do? Like, I mean, if we don't speak our mind, then I'm kind of speechless, because what do people expect? Like, we are here to kind of speak our mind. We are content creators. We, you know, be authentic, right? Have the guts to say what you think.
No, you're there. No, you're there to feed their ideals. I'm saying that as a joke. But
I know.
That's how
no,
they
yeah.
think
you better say it three
yeah.
times. By the way, like that's a joke. but okay, like so. And here's what I'll stick my neck out and say. I think the 14 people who are the vocal minority are one of the loudest vocal minorities. If I measure the decibels of the vocal minority across 14 versus World of Warcraft, I can tell you the decibel of the vocal minority here, way higher, way higher. And it sometimes I wonder why. And my theory, when I sat down with Arthur for dinner, I told him my theory is that it's because like they are louds like that. And people need to latch on to something to feel like, to talk about something. I don't know. I think it's just this energy of like, people want to latch on to something.
Yeah, I've for some reason within Final Fantasy 14, and again, this isn't exclusive to it, but it's like it becomes a part of their personality. Like, it's one thing to let something you love be a part of your life. It's another thing to make it a part of everything that you are. For now, sure. I know it seems hypocritical that I would say that given that I make content. But when I leave here, I don't go to like the grocery store and like,
hey dude, have you heard of this free trial?
like when I'm out at conventions meeting other creators, I don't talk about Fort, like I don't let it be a part of my actual personality. Like, honestly, if anything, probably the biggest problem is that Twitch is too much of my personality now. Right. So you see, I'll be at like a convention, say Keck W out loud. That's the most embarrassing thing. But I'm not sitting here like trying to make 14 part, but like some people, like it just becomes, and this is again not exclusive with 14, people do this with everything in you know existence, like something becomes too much a part of their life. And here it just seems like it's more a part of their life. Like I've never run into anyone who is like this with WoW. I see people who are obsessed with WoW. I see people who live and breathe WoW.
Right.
But I never see it become like this. And maybe that's just because they are quieter about it, or they're just like in their cliques or their niches with it. I even League, it's like is known for among the most toxic people. Like, oh, it's so toxic, but it's like a lot of little people being toxic. Right. Like in like, it's like in 10 people games, you get like 3 people, 2 people, 4 people, you know, 1 person maybe. And they're just like, you just slash mute all and you're done.
Right.
And it's like the end of it. But like, I've never met anyone who's like League is like is their life. Like they it's their personality. They're like, I'm going to be a Yordle when I grow up, I guess, grow down or whatever.
My theory, my theory is that and just hearing what you've said, my theory is that 14 has such a profound impact on some people. Like the MS2's really like kind of changed them, I guess, emotionally. And I can understand why, because like, you know, the story really has a lasting impact on you. And I wonder, is it because people kind of start wrapping their identities around this game? So anything that comes near to threaten that identity, then, you know, it's being reacted to in a very visceral way. And that's why you have incidents like Scott being doxxed and whatnot, which is really unfortunate, by the way. Not like, I think it's the first time I'm hearing about the details, which is, it makes me kind of sad. And obviously, you know, I do want to kind of move on and talk about like Endwalker, but you know, what you said definitely gave me a moment for pause and just kind of reflecting on the game. And okay, cool. Like I think we've spoken enough about drama. Like there's a certain quota that, you know, we can only reach, because beyond that, like, you know, we might get canceled. So let's not go there. Just kidding.
I'm not a drama reactor yet. I'm not at that level.
For sure. All right, so jokes aside, Endwalker, right? So Shadowbringers is very high. Lots of new players, and then Endwalker launched, and obviously the server is kind of broke. Did you, as a veteran, expect that? Like, the servers, you know, going through, you know, servers being on fire? Like, is that something you expected?
Remember when I said every other expansion had server problems?
Yeah.
I knew Endwalker was on that track. I was like, well, A Realm Reborn bad, Stormblood bad, Endwalker bad. Endwalker, you didn't disappoint. You met my expectations.
Right.
Unfortunate, okay. But you met my expectations. I expected more of a disaster than we had gotten, for sure.
Right.
I actually thought it was going to be worse than it was.
And, you know, obviously people played 6.0, great experience. MSU was great. People loved it. And obviously I felt, and that was my first expansion that was current. And I definitely felt like, there was a magical moment in time as well. Right. And obviously the highs of the MS2s kind of carried you through for the subsequent month. And then, you know, like as a content creator, like, you know, obviously you've seen all the expansions. What was your thought after finishing 6.0? Like MS2s are done. And then it's kind of like life is back to normal. Like, what were your thoughts at that point in time?
Honestly, I was kind of just, it was normal for me the entire time. Again, I wasn't really wrapped up in the whole, like, the game has blown up situation. Excuse me. So I was just focused on doing the things. The only thing I did different is I actually normally skip the MSQ when it comes out. because I'm like, you know what, I'll skip it so people don't have to worry about spoilers as much. Like, yeah, they'll see a boss or like a dungeon or whatever, but you know, that way I can also, I can get to the extreme trial, I can put out guides faster, you know, it was better content based. Only difference I made for Endwalkers, I watched all the cutscenes. You know, I actually did the story through. So right. Other than that, it was run of the mill for me. I just wanted everyone to have their own experience and for it to be good. I didn't want my experience and what I was choosing to do dictating what anybody else chose to do or how anyone else experienced it. And I think that needed to happen because everyone up to that point was doing all the story reacts.
Right.
And so everyone just kind of needed to have their own way of doing it. I don't know. It wasn't really that different. But my, as a content creator, my curiosity is what people were going to do when they realized it was done. Because you asked me what I thought. I wasn't worried. I was thinking, I wonder what they're going to do, like what they're going to think. And I've seen it a lot. I've seen tons of people. They rode that high. They got the hype. But as soon as, and I know Arthur's has a lot to say about this, then they went to being a regular 14 player after they were done with that high. And it is not the same experience.
Fair
and
point.
That is hard on a lot of people.
And let's transit, because there's a perfect segue. It's almost like you read my mind. Fast forward to today, right? You know, we are the tail end. We are awaiting Dawn Trail. And obviously, like, there's been a lot of rumblings in the community, right? And we don't have to sugarcoat this. One of the biggest, obviously, kind of requests, right, and I'm using the word loosely here, from the community is for more mid-core content. Now, every time we bring up the word mid-core, there is someone in the comment section that will say, hey, but mid-core content is so difficult to define, where do you draw the line, etc. Right. So before we even go there, like, what do you think about a statement like that? Like, what exactly is mid-core content?
Mid-core content is a content below the upper echelon of Savage rating. I actually consider most of Savage rating to be mid-core. And that's the thing. I don't think it's so much that it's broad. I think that your individual skill level allows you to perceive it differently. If you think P9, for example, is like impossible for you, then suddenly Treasure Map starts to look mid-core.
Okay.
You know?
Right.
Like that's the problem right there.
Right.
Whereas when you have the full scope of the content, you look at Ultimate as the hardcore, Savage as the midcore, and Extreme as the stepping stone into it. So I think it's stuff that's like, you probably won't roll it over in one try, but it's also not going to take you like dedicating to a static, like in order to have a reasonable chance of getting it done. Right. Savage is at that point. People who think you need a static to do that, you really don't. You just need to be willing enough to like
PF and stuff,
try to beat it. Yeah. Yeah, so even Ultimate's kind of like that now, but that's a whole different story.
So it does sound like, you know, the definition of mid-core does change depending on kind of your skill level, right? And that's why I think when content creators talk about mid-core, there's always like this voice like, wait, sorry, I don't understand what you mean by mid-core. So I kind of am more aligned with your take on this, which is it depends on your skill level. But if we're talking about the average 14 player, right? I guess the point is, they want something that they're able to do on a regular basis that is challenging, but yet not like, you know, too punishing. I guess, is that the right way to frame it? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Like Criterion, I would throw into that batch. It's just the people who want mid-core content are more motivated by reward than they are for the challenge as well. In my experience, like, am I going to sit here and farm Criterion Savage? No, but I'm obviously doing it because I want to say that I beat it. Like, that's something for me personally. A person who's looking at the game needs more mid-core probably is looking at mid-core content that also is rewarding to them as a player.
Right.
So I think that's the struggle Endwalkers had more than anything, is finding a middle ground of content that is somewhat engaging, but also makes the player feel good about completing it, or like they can do it on the regular.
And we'll go into why, but since you brought up like Criterion and Variant Dungeon, so I have a question, and I asked Arthur the same thing, which I, you know, as someone new versus veteran like you guys, if the problem is rewards, why is it that, you know, just adding rewards, why is it hard to add rewards to a system like that? Because it's just an NPC, right? It just dispense the rewards. Why are they, you know, hesitant to add maybe actual gear rewards, maybe exclusive cosmetics behind that? Like, what is with this need to kind of, you know, be slower on making changes there?
So it's several fold. First, in terms of gear, I don't think we see original gear for stuff like Criterion strictly because of a resource, an asset thing. I forgot when, but they talked about it in one interview or something like that, where it was like when they're making, like when they're budgeting out, like what kind of equipment, glam, you know, actual gear is going to be in a patch, they have to weigh in the difficulty of like obtaining any individual piece. So like, oh, is this going to be really expensive crafting? Is this going to be really easy to get from a quest? Is this going to be from a new raid, et cetera, et cetera? And so when it comes to introducing something that is technically raid content in the form of Criterion, it becomes suddenly like, do we want to add another thing that's like comes from this hardcore thing? And then we have to make something for every job or every role, or, you know, so there's, I think a lot of it comes down to they don't want to make actual new equipment for Criterion because it's too much on that scale of like it's raid related gear, raid related content. Mm-hmm. I think that's even why the Criterion Savage weapon they added is a reskin of an existing one. It's a glowy version of an existing one, which I think is a proper fine solution, even if they want to do that for normal mode with like the gear from there. And I don't think anyone would complain about that. And I think that's the big thing, is they seem to want to strike this balance with difficulty versus reward structure that doesn't make any sense anymore. And it really never has, where they don't want to give Criterion gear because it's not as hard as Savage, but it's harder than Alliance Raids, and Alliance Raids give something that's really not that far below Savage. So what's the real problem here?
and so let's dive into that a bit more, right? You mentioned Alliance Raids, and I think a lot of people would say like the latest Alliance Raids is probably, you know, it's really easy compared to like previous Alliance Raids like Ivalice and whatnot. Do you think a part of that is just them reacting to, you know, there's this massive surge of new players coming in Shadowbringers, and, you know, they're just cognizant of like just trying to make the game easier and more friendly to like as wide a player base as possible? I don't know, like this is just my random guesses, but what do you think is kind of the rationale behind like, you know, a lot of the easier Alliance Raids?
I think it's strange because Aglaia, I think, was on content pretty well done. Only on content, though. It's already aged like milk in terms of like going back and doing it. You just skip like half the fights now. And so I think some of it is they expected a lot of people in Endwalker to be brand new. So they didn't want to make them that hard. But it's not even about difficulty, because like obviously I'm not gonna sit here and like be like, yeah, you know, it's gotta be Savage, and where's my Savage Alliance race. But it's like when you do some of the old ones with it, even those are more engaging. Like if you do Ivalice, or I'll even say I don't really like the near raids, but like Puppet's Bunker is probably a pretty good example of like a, I'd say, an overall well-balanced Alliance raid. There's just so much more engaging, but they're like, well, we outscale those, but we still don't outscale those as hard as the things that we're outscaling in our current expansion. It's just kind of like a strange thing where we don't really know why they're balanced the way that they are. And I don't know if that's because they wanted to make them easier. Maybe they wanted to focus on storytelling through the mechanics, right, which there's a lot of in the most recent Alliance raids, where like every single one of their skills has some sort of like lore or reason behind it. And they're like really focused on that. I don't know, but I think even Yoshi P and his oversimplification comment, I think even he realizes maybe the Alliance raids were too far, because you got to realize they apologized for Void Arc being too easy.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. They not only did they apologize for Void Arc being too easy, They then planted their feet in the ground and said that the Weeping City was exactly the difficulty they intended, and they wouldn't be changing it.
Okay, interesting.
And Weeping City destroyed people.
Right.
It still can occasionally, not as bad because, you know, we have all this gear and like, you know, everything's been changed since then. But to go from that back then to like the way this is now, I would have expected that kind of same, ideal, and right, it's just that's not there,
right? And Yoshi-P's statement, you know, recently, I guess, is starting to make a bit more sense to me with that context. speaking about, like, you know, more context around what people are talking about with 14, I think the other big kind of hot topic is, kind of like just job balancing, right? Like, and a lot of this spoken about job homogenization, you know, the 2-minute window. As a veteran, again, you've seen it from the start. What's your take on this? Like, is the 2-minute window healthy? And would you want to change it?
Yes. Yes. It definitely is something I would put on my please change this list.
So before you answer, let me propose a counter argument that I always hear in comments.
Okay.
And the counter argument is, hey, we need to make the jobs like way more kind of simpler to play, to coordinate one another, really, because like this game, we're trying to go after like the mass casual. So like we need to make it as simple to kind of fit into jobs as possible. That's the comment I often read, which is like the people defending like, okay, this is why the 2-minute window exists. But what's your take as someone who has seen the game from the start?
Sorry, I had to exhale after reading, after hearing that that's what you have to read in your comments. My take on it is that it's not fun, and that's all that matters. Doesn't matter if it's easy or not, or if it's too hard, because if there's anything I've learned over 10 years of playing Final Fantasy 14, and in fact, in all video games, you can't make someone who doesn't want to be good at the game good at the game, no matter how easy you make the game. So if somebody doesn't care about how well to play, they want to play their job, you can dumb it down to 2 minutes. You could dumb it down to whatever you want. You could take away buffs entirely, and it would not make it easier or a better experience for them, because they didn't care in the first place. So that lowest common denominator chasing it achieves nothing. Another great example, have you seen the skill gap between someone who's really bad at Fortnite and really good at Fortnite, really bad at League of Legends, really good at League of Legends? Those are some of the most popular games on the planet, and they don't compromise that in any capacity. And in fact, often change it, which would be confusing to those same people under most pretenses. So I don't agree with that at all, because some people enjoy seeing something they're not capable of, being impressed by it, and knowing that they can get better. Maybe that could be them. Maybe they could be pro one day. But when the difference is so little that it's just a matter of being bad or being good,
right,
there's no really being great, they don't really care to improve at all. Hey, stop. I saw my cats fighting. Nice.
Okay, cool. So I know your stance on this, and let's just put a bento pin in that, because I'm gonna come back to that later when we talk about Dawn Trail. But before we even move to Dawn Trail, another hot topic, like obviously Island Sanctuary was, you know, supposed to be a big feature in Endwalker, right? And obviously, and you can say that some part of it is like the community overhyping it, thinking it's like gonna be Animal Crossing. Yes, in some, and he, Yoshi-P, did clarify explicitly that it's not Animal Crossing, like, you know, and a lot of it is just community hype. But what's your take on it? Like, what's your take on Island Sanctuary as a whole? Yeah,
I'm really glad they're going back to Ishgard Restoration, and I didn't do that either. But I'm definitely more interested in that than spending 12 hours gathering to speed level, and or just assigning my workshop to do stuff for a little bit and calling it a day, and catching monsters that just spawn under specific conditions and are in no way engaging me with the island system. I knew it was going to be like Animal Crossing also. I didn't overhype it, but I thought it would be better than that.
Did you feel like it had potential? Like, for example, if they tweak certain things, I think one of the things that Arthur and I talked about was like, okay, maybe if you could collaborate on islands and build stuff, it could be more fun. But what do you think? Like, did it have potential?
I think the one thing they said it wasn't going to be was the thing it needed to be to succeed. It needed to be more like Animal Crossing. It needed to be less of a, I'm picking up trash on my island, and more of a, I'm making my island a better place. And it really wasn't. It was just, you were essentially commercializing your island more than anything else. Like, here's your island, but also do all this stuff for me. I'd rather Totoro have come up to me and been like, here's your house. Now pay back the loan, pay back the mortgage. And I'd be like, okay.
Okay, cool. And so with that, right, like obviously you mentioned like they're bringing back the Ishgard Restoration mechanic for the cosmic exploration stuff. Okay, so I think that's a great spot. Oh wait, before that, no, there's one more hot topic I remembered. everyone's talking about the Relic, right? Relic progression and Endwalker. And obviously, like, Yoshi-P has also made statements about that. Like, yes, they're aware and, you know, and whatnot. So, and I think I know your stance on this, which is obviously, you know, we hope for something a bit more, I guess, more than just going to a vendor to exchange tombstones for your progression. Looking forward, though, Dondrio, and again, you've seen all these expansion launch, right? And you've seen the rhetorics, like the interviews that Yoshi-P is giving. Yeah, like, do you think things will be different? And if so, where do you think are the places they'll make changes? Because there's obviously the job stuff we talked about. There's the, you know, large-scale field operation stuff that, you know, we know are coming back. But what's your vibe about Dondrio? Like, will things change in a big way? What's your vibe?
No. Even he says that it's not like they're going to be making, like, sweeping changes to the game about, like, you know, oh, you know, we've maybe gone too far, but so we're going to try, you know, pulling back the curtain on a few things, but it's not like we're going to, like, just completely remake the entire game in terms of, like, all the stuff that we've done. And a lot of that stuff they really shouldn't undo. It's just a few particular things that we've just kind of been like, you know what, this is based on feedback, but it's a little too far. I think that, first of all, I think positionals will be gone, but I think in return, we'll probably get a few adjustments to the way jobs align. I think we'll see, like, a few more 90-second cooldowns come back. I think a couple jobs like Ninja might go back to having trick on 60. Like, I think we'll see a few cases of that at most. But I think that certain jobs and their simplifications are still going to be a matter of player preference. Like, I think Astro is going to be not gutted, but if you like the cards, that's not going to be the reason to play anymore.
Right, right.
So
wait, sorry, just to be clear, you think that they will move away from the 2-minute window?
Yeah, I think they'll aim for it, but give you more tools to operate outside. So instead of 2 minutes being all of where the outlier damage happens, they'll just give a few tools back to make other points strong for other jobs.
Okay.
Like at the start of the expansion, you know, ley lines was 90 seconds, for example. We wondered why, because it didn't make any sense with the 2-minute window. But when it began, when it went to being 2 minutes, it was kind of like, maybe we shouldn't have changed that. And so I think we'll see a little bit, a tiny bit more of stuff that falls in other places. What I don't think we'll get back is any 3-minute cooldowns. I think they're done with, like, Battle Voice being 3 minutes, like it was in Shadowbringers. So I think 2 is still going to be the goal. But if you miss a 2-minute window, you could probably join the next 1-minute window, for example.
Right.
And then it's not as bad as, you know, being completely off sync for the entire rest of the fight, which is something you could do in Shadowbringers. If you miss a window, you're like, okay, I'll just get in on the next window. And that's fine. You can't do that now. It just doesn't work.
Right. And so it sounds like on the job side, you think, okay, small changes. But what about, you know, the rest of the other elements? Like, for example, the field operation stuff. I guess the vibe, what I'm trying to ask is post-expansion content, right? Like, when you get to endgame, like, do you expect that to be better from where we are? Yeah. Like, what's your sense?
I do. Yeah, I do. And I think that's a matter of volume more than anything else. So between Shadowbringers and Endwalker, there were things that were given and things that were taken away, things that were tried and things that were abandoned. And the problem was the things they abandoned from Shadowbringers and tried in Endwalker didn't work out. So they've been talking about how they're going back to having this, having that, having whatever. The things that they know for a fact were successful on their release. And while they didn't want them to overstay their welcome, now they're missed. I mean, that's the bottom line. People, Ishgard Restoration, yes. Was it insane what people did to try to get Saint of the Firmament? Sure. But what it did was it gave people the more approachable method to approach crafting and gathering. I gave them long-term goals. I gave them seasonal goals. And a regularly updated story and reward structure that they didn't feel like was out of reach. So a lot of people engaged with it, even if they weren't big in crafting and gathering. We lost that in Endwalker in exchange for Island Sanctuary, which is an island, as chat has put it, I saw at one point, you can't even fish on it. So it's like,
I didn't think about that.
It's
okay.
Like such a, yeah, it's such a wild swing in the other direction. That doesn't make any sense. And that's also, you know, oh, that we didn't have exploration content. Well, there was nothing really, like Island Sanctuary kind of was the replacement for it. And it doesn't work for that either. Like, it's like, it fills like a gap in between the two that doesn't do any of that stuff at in any capacity. It's just like, it's a bunch of missed marks. This is how I would describe Endwalker. I'm glad you tried something new. I'm glad that you didn't just want to rest on your laurels, but the feedback is what you tried didn't work. So if you're going to try it again, something big has to change, or you can go back to the thing that did work and just give it a new coat of paint, and people will probably be okay with that.
Right. Okay, cool. So I kind of have a handle of like how you think about Dontrail. And let's just kind of put you in a hypothetical situation. Let's say you had a magic wand and you can do anything you want to change the game. Let's say you were Yoshi P, like, I don't know, eons ago, and you and you can potentially rebuild everything from scratch, right? You can rebuild the engine from scratch. What are some of the things that you want to change other than, you know, transmog that you whispered? But what are some of the things you would change? Yeah.
Give me a damn friends list that works, please. I hate this friends list so much. Yeah, friends list. It's a lot of the simple systematic functions, I suppose. Transmog, friends list. I think consolidating some of the social options as a whole, I think there's way too many different ones and most of them aren't utilized. I think what's a few other ones? I mean, the blacklist by extension as well. That's not a short list. There's so many things they've tried that just haven't worked.
Let me ask you, one of the things that's most jarring, I think, when you first come to 14, was kind of learning like snapshotting and the server ticks. And a lot has been said about like that's just an infrastructure limitation, right? That's just how the engine is coded. And I can kind of see that. Is that something that you want to change? If you could change it and you could do it your way.
If I could change it and make it like WoW's dots and hots, where, you know, haste affects the rate of tick, you know, the tick rate and the duration and all that, it kind of struggles in 14 because we do have such specific buff windows, you know. So like if things are out of place, which is another big problem, honestly, with the gameplay system, is the lack of ability to experience like different speeds unless you're 100% sure that it's going to work, which is why people just leave it to the math people, the number people, to figure out when they can run different speeds and how it'll actually work. I'd say I would, because I think that's the reason why we can't have like dot jobs or hot healers, like things that are purely those, because you then all the damage or all of the damage checks need to allow for these 3-second tick windows, or a job can just be completely, you know, ousted as useless.
Got it.
If not in the whole fight in a specific phase, like Summoner, when it had 7 dots that people would use, you couldn't put 7 dots up on like something that was only going to be alive for 20 seconds. It was like, bro, it takes me 20 seconds to get 7 dots up on this thing.
It's dead already. Okay. And I, you know, I kind of feel, there's some part of me, like when Yoshi P says something like he thinks that, you know, there's another game in him and he wants to do another MMO. He said this on a few occasions now. There's a big part of me that always wonders whether he's making statements like that because of the limitations he's facing with the infrastructure that 14 has. And I don't know, like, what's your take on this? Do you think there's ideas in his head that he can't bring to life just because of spaghetti code?
Oh, there's definitely is. I mean, I remember in A Realm Reborn, there's a slew of things that he was like, oh, we got to do this. And they never did it because they literally couldn't. The big one is roaming primals, where he wanted like Ifrit and whatnot to randomly be summoned on maps. Yeah. And then
that would be badass, dude.
If an FC went out and killed them, they could summon them one time in like a big fight to like help them with something else. So like they wanted like the sky to turn red, like when somebody summoned Ifrit or something like that. Yeah.
That'll be really cool.
He wanted a handful of things back then. That's one of a few things that he had ideas for that never came to fruition because they couldn't, A, they didn't work, and B, they wouldn't have made sense with the way the game was structured. Mm-hmm. Like right now, if Ifrit did that and you could pull him in and summon him, like, where would you, what are you going to do it? Like, right, when the boss, the final coil was at like 3% health, you're like, all right, we're going to beat the enrage this time for sure. You know,
I kind of feel like, on some level, the chaos that like being able to summon like the primals in the open world, maybe like even bring it to the cities, like that kind of chaos could be good for the game. I don't know. Like if I think about where the game is right now and it being so like a lull versus like a chaos like that, I think, yeah, maybe chaos isn't such a bad thing after all. But okay, I see your point. That's very illuminating, right? Like, I think how we think about Dawn Trail and whatnot. And obviously, like, only time will tell. And speaking about the future, right? I think we can kind of switch gears here. I kind of want to just talk about, you know, your future, because I know that recently you've started, you know, Variety a lot. You've done a Variety channel. Kind of tell us, like, and you kind of spoke about it at the start, like, how has your, like, what's your view towards, like, Variety channel? How has it evolved? Because I do feel like the 14 directory is great for people to start as content creators. And I think there's an understanding that after the MSQs, you start doing Variety. Like, I think generally people here are more accepting of that. And yeah, like, you know, what's your take on Variety and how do you find it?
I have a piece of advice.
Okay.
And I actually had this exact discussion with a friend the other day.
Right.
If Variety is something that you want to do, don't.
Really?
Start in the Final Fantasy 14 category.
Wait, really?
I would not in any capacity recommend
Really?
That.
Okay, I've different views, but yeah, please explain. Like, would love to hear your thoughts.
I have just witnessed so many people who come into the 14 category, have a great time, and as soon as they want to play something else.
Mm. Oh, no, their viewership dropped for sure. Like, that's expected.
Oh, but it doesn't just drop. It drops like
it plummets,
to a point.
Basically.
Yeah, it's so early in my career, even I didn't. So, okay, I need some context for this. Early in my career, I was doing really well in 14, but I couldn't get partnered on Twitch. They didn't care that I had 500 or 600 viewers a stream.
And no,
Really? That didn't get you partnered. That didn't get you partnered back
so
then.
What do you need to get partnered? Like, sacrifice a newborn?
Nobody knew.
Oh,
there was no way. You applied. You said, this is my stream. This is like my schedule. This is what I want to do on the play. And it just needed to be, it needed to be written like a proper, like, cover letter for a job.
Okay.
If it was poorly written, you didn't
That's
get
insane,
it. You didn't
dude.
Get
okay.
accepted. Yeah. Like, I couldn't get it. So I felt trapped on 14 for a while, because as much as I wanted to play other games, I couldn't deal with 300 or 400 viewers or 200 viewers or whatever, because Twitch wasn't accepting me at the 600.
Right.
So what chance did I stand at the 200?
If you're not a partner, can you monetize your stream? Can people like sub?
Back then, no.
Oh, okay. I get
people,
it.
People set up like third-party apps, like not just Patreon, but there's like a whole slew of other services that people made, because there was no like real way to determine how you would get your sub button or when you would get your sub button or if would ever get partnered. There was just, it wasn't like as streamlined as it is now.
Okay, so you felt like, threat on some level.
Yeah. Mm. Even though I liked playing it, it wasn't like the only game I ever wanted to play. I mean, you mentioned I had Smite videos and Sims. Like, I clearly was interested in other games.
Yeah.
And so I had that feeling. And that's how I felt when it was hard to get partnered. But that was like, I had already committed to being full time, and like, I was just making that decision. Now it's worse than that, because that was at like a peak. That was at like a time where that was like an insane thing to be able to do at all. Now it's like you can usually do fairly okay, at least as a hobby, with, you know, just a couple hundred people in the chat really dedicating to your community, you know, making sure to take multiple avenues, you know, maybe produce YouTube content, TikTok content, have a Discord. You can build something that's like comfortable. But if you build it specifically in Final Fantasy, and this isn't exclusively a 14 problem, mind you, this can happen with a number of other games if you like trap yourself into one of them.
Right.
You're telling your community that's what you're making everything for. As soon as you're not doing that, whether or not it's a success is a big, big crapshoot.
Interesting.
It is not an easy transition to go from, especially true if you're someone who came into 14 and did MSQ Reacts the whole way. Going from MSQ Reacts to another content type, you have to really know how to build your content in order to make that work.
Fair
you can't
enough.
Just have like ridden the wave of doing MSQ, you know, because even when you finish MSQ and just go to playing the game, you're going to hit a dip.
So I buy that, which is like during the MSQs, you got to really figure out like what your next step is. Right. But okay, so the reason why I think that 14 was the most trendy for variety streams, and I'm not disputing the fact that you will definitely see a dip, for sure, guarantee.
Yeah.
But the reason why I say, like, I think 14 is great for, well, better relative to, let's say, if you play World of Warcraft and you want to branch into variety, it's because I think 14 has this, the community is more attuned with playing another game, because Yoshi-P tells them, go play another game when you don't want to play 14. So to me, there was always this thing where it was like an understanding, like, hey, I'm going to play other games and it's fine in this community. The other reason why I say it's better is because I think most 14 players, they play JRPGs as well. So to me, that was always a very nice complimentary kind of thing to go into. But I don't dispute your fact that you will see a dip in viewership. But I guess my point is more like, you know, versus other titles and genres, it's still, you probably retain more of your audience versus others when you switch games. But yeah, I don't know if you agree with that.
I don't. I think you need to, if you want to have 14 be something that is truly a variety tangent, you need to not play it every day. You need to say, oh, I'm streaming 4 days a week. I'm playing it 2 days out of those 4 days. You can't have people who learn about your stream only for one thing and then expect them to stay for the other thing.
Makes sense.
That's true of any game. Like if you were playing Honkai or if you were playing League or WoW, I mean, I've seen it just so many times. And again, not just in 14. I know Dyrus, he was one of the first streamers I ever watched. Yeah. He got big in League. Yeah. When he plays other things, people still don't leave the man alone about League. Like they're just like trying to pull him back in. And it's just like he wants to be beyond that in his life, and people are like are trying to trap him in that part of his life, and it's what they want. It's not because they don't care what you want. They want what they want, and they know, oh, I like Dyrus when he was playing League, so that's what I want. So I'm going to say that they don't care. Like that's true of a lot of people. They don't care.
Whoops
in the game that won't be mentioned. That's a big one.
And I feel like this is a conversation that whenever I talk to 14 creators, it's just this common topic amongst us that somewhere down the line, you need to do something else other than just log into Libsa and just talk to chat. Because there's like, unless you're Arthur and you can talk about the most random shit all day, I feel like eventually you hit a wall. Like, there's only so much you can talk about as you inspect Adventurer's Plate and stuff like that. And that's the reason why I said I think there's a common understanding amongst the audience, like, okay, it's okay to do other things. I might not watch, but it's okay. You can go do other things. But it's an interesting thing that you brought up. That's something to ponder. So let me ask you, if there's anyone watching this VOD in the future and they want to be a 14 creator, right? So let's say they come in Dawn Trail. And, you know, you have your wealth of experience creating content for this game. What advice would you give them as they go through the MSQs, you know, like a Realm Reborn? Like, and they're blowing up, you know, people like their reactions. What advice would you give people like that?
If people started watching you for your reactions, just be a React streamer. Don't be a 14 streamer. That's the truth.
Right.
That was the thing that Drew in was reacting to 14. You got to just go react to something. Don't then try to shift into being like
and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, don't even do it. Don't even try. Oh, I'm going to do Savage. No, abandon the prospect. It's completely a waste of your time. If you want to do Savage, do Savage, but don't do it because you think people are going to like, oh yeah, that's the next thing I'm going to do that people are going to love.
I guess
just keep reacting.
I guess the counter argument to that is like, I will run out of things to react. Like there's only so many Pine video, so many Joe Cat videos I can watch, you know, like you will run out of stuff to react. And then what's next?
Oh, don't just react to 14 stuff. Just react. That's it. Just your channel's a react channel.
Wait, hang on.
Now.
So you're suggesting that the person just opened Limsa and hey guys, we're going to watch 10
don't
videos
Don't even play
today.
14. Just play it. Just react. Just, I don't care. Watch WoW videos. Watch police like dash cams. I don't care. But don't sit there and sit on 14 and just be 14 and just be playing the game. That's it. Don't go from every video being, oh, reacting to 2.1 MSQ, 3.5 MSQ, the 4.0 trailer, you know, Dawn Trail, like react, continue to react to those. If you enjoy 14, continue to do it.
Right.
But just keep reacting to things and don't transition into being a gameplay related content creator.
Okay, because I see your point.
That is, you've already set the precedent that this is the reason people should watch you.
Right.
Is your reaction to something happening. Go, honestly, if it starts working for 14 and you're doing react content for 14 and you're watching all the trailers, go do Honkai and like Hoyaverse stuff.
Yeah.
And like go do Nikkei. Like literally transition immediately to another really popular genre and react to that stuff next. I'm not even kidding. Just do not then sit down and say, I'm going to just play Final Fantasy 14. Mm. Do not do it. You are going to get depressed with the difference in what you experienced at the high and the low.
I've heard that a lot. Where it's this mental struggle, right? Which is, as a content creator, I think especially if you're early into your content creation journey, you distill your value as a human being to a number. And it's like, man, I'm a shitty ass human being because my viewership dropped 50%. You know, like it's a tough spot to be in. And I feel like, yeah, a lot of 14 creators, especially those who came in during Shadowbringers, I think like they kind of, you know, I think there were a lot of people who kind of prepped the sprouts for it. And obviously when I started, I was told on many occasions by creators like, hey, just expect a dip. It's normal. And you have to be ready for it. And it's normal, right? So I was kind of well attuned to it. But I feel like people who didn't expect it, it was a tough mental hurdle to get through, which is they came only for my MSQ reactions, not me as a person. Now, you can be really good at it. And I think the smart ones and the people who have really succeeded is they use like the MSQ as a way to kind of convey their personality, and that's where they try and retain their audience. And that's the smart thing to do. But yeah, like I sometimes reflect on that journey and I feel like I need to tell people out there, like, if you're gonna start MSQs as a sprout, do it tactically. There's a reason why people stall, and you know, your personality just needs to come through. And by the way, like I don't know whether I'm dumb, but like I literally rushed through Shadowbringers. Like, I remember there's this time I hit Yuumo and I just couldn't stop playing. And like one of my VODs was like 6 hours long. And I guess if there's any sprouts out there, like if you're trying to do this like professionally, like there is some wisdom in kind of pacing yourself. And just thinking about the next steps, I guess. Yeah.
Sorry, my cat is
no worries.
Finding out I have skin under my shirt. Ivy, relax. just chill. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I just can't recommend just doing the one thing and then just deciding, oh, I'm going to 180 and just do something else and that it's going to work because this worked. Mm. It just doesn't work. Like, honestly, I've always said I could probably have a lot more success if I wanted to do things that are more traditional, but I stay very much in the lane that I'm comfortable in. And maybe that won't always be the case. But it's like I'll play like, you know, at random RPGs that release or like games that I'm interested in on stream, but I'll mostly produce content on YouTube on 14 or 16 or, you know, Square products. And then now I have the second channel. If I do want to produce something else on anything else, I can. But it's just, I've just seen it happen to too many people where they start playing 14 and the stalling is great and it's good for that particular range of content. It doesn't work as soon as you start doing literally anything else.
Interesting.
It works in 14. You can't go then play 7 like Rebirth and sit in like the grasslands and just like chat for like an hour before you do the next like cutscene or something like that. Like,
okay,
translate.
So let's say on hindsight, you can advise sprouts, right? Would you say that the right way to play the MSQs is, you know, do some cutscenes every day and literally just stop streaming? Like, okay, guys, I'm done after 1 hour today. Like, thank you for coming. And then, you know, you just kind of prolong it as much as possible. Because I feel like that's...
I would say you should literally plan out exactly the levels you're going to get through on that day. And then... like stall out like in between all of them and like drag out that like hour of MSQ into like 5 hours of stream.
And you watch like you, I don't know, react to other stuff in between, like, I don't know, dash cam footage or whatever. Like, but that sounds like, yeah, I don't know. This is an interesting, interesting thing to ponder, I guess.
it's literally to pull that, like, that high experience that you're getting and pull it out as long as possible.
Right.
Like, I can get through the MSQs, like all of them, in like 2 weeks if I really want to just sit there and stream and like blast through them and whatnot.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Right. Fair enough.
You want it to take like 4 months, because as soon as it's over, there's depending on the type of content creator you are, when it's over, it might really be over. Like, you might not be able to pull a viewership because they were, like, people have put it, emotional vampires for those things.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay, cool. We've covered a very big spectrum of topics. Any like last conversational topics? Do you want to talk about Lalafels being the superior race? Is that something we are ending the...
Only for raiding, because it's easiest to like dodge AoEs. I've done some of the most ridiculous dodges, and even though I know it's West Coast ping, it's got to also be Lalafels as well. It's got to be a little bit of both.
Yeah,
as far as I'm concerned.
All right, you heard the man, folks. Like, there's a reason to play Lalafels. Just saying. Like, people keep asking me to ask you, like, what do you think about Lalafels? I don't know why. Maybe because you always criticize them on stream. I don't know. I keep getting this question. Please ask him about Lalafels. So, it is what it is. yeah. Like, any last shout outs? Oh wait, we haven't talked about how can people follow you. Like, both your main channel, your content, and how do people follow you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're wrapping up here, then yeah. Hey, everyone. Mr. Happy here again. Still. I suppose. And you can find me on Twitch, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or Daylight Time, whatever. It's 7. If the clock's is 7 on the West Coast, then that's where I am. 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. every day. Normally not playing Final Fantasy 14. Right now I am, because I'm waiting for Dragon's Dogma 2, which I'll be playing the day before it comes out, technically, because I'm going to exercise my quote-unquote dual citizenship to New Zealand.
Very nice.
To get a copy at 5 a.m. Pacific on the 21st. I do that a lot now.
Right.
I have a New Zealand PlayStation account,
right,
and I buy the game in a different country.
That's really smart, actually.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not waiting till midnight NA time. Come on now. I'll just do this and it should be fine. You can also find my cats there as well. This is one of them. I don't know where Fat Ass is. He's over there. Hi, Ivy. Say hi. Say hi. There she is.
Yeah, she looks pretty sleepy, though.
She's always sleepy.
Well, okay, cool. So, you know what? We'll definitely plug all your socials in the comments and in the description. But look, like, it's been a great conversation. I definitely gotten a lot out of this, really, because I think, like, there's some historical context that you can provide that I really couldn't have gotten from anywhere else. Like, I could read what people said 3 years ago, but I feel like you've given me a succinct summary of like what the hell happened since, you know, 1.0. And it's a breath of fresh air just talking to someone who is, I guess, candid. I think that's the right word. Because I think, like, again, like, when I came into 14, I think one of the biggest things I noticed was like people do tend to step on eggshells. Like, they, you know, they, yeah. And I think you know what I mean. Like, thanks for being so candid. I felt like I learned a lot. And I'm sure it's not the first time we're going to talk about this. In the future, there will be like, you know, many, many people weigh conversation on this podcast. Definitely would love to have you back for that. And I think it'll be a blast just talking about various things. So yeah, thank you so much, Mr. Happy. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I love doing stuff like this. I was quick to say yes. I was like, oh yeah, I don't even need to read the whole message. I see the first two lines. The answer is yes. All right, here we go.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm always down. Especially, and thank you for being flexible with the timing. I mean, I just live streamed this.
Oh, no worries, dude. Like I said, like, you're gamers, dude. So we don't sleep and, you know, we stay up late.
I sleep. I go to sleep at 11 p.m.
Actually, that's true. You have a very healthy lifestyle. Like, you go to the gym, you eat, you know, you eat healthy and you sleep early. It's like 8 a.m. there, right? So you wake up early, I guess.
I wake up at 6 a.m. Yeah.
What time do you go to bed?
11 p.m. normally is like the latest.
You are healthy, dude. That's not normal for a gamer. I wouldn't expect a professional like content creator to have that kind of lifestyle.
Well, you can't do it all day every day if you're not like in a good condition, because that's when you just disappear for 3 days. Wait,
isn't that your
tech line?
Something like all day, every day, Mr. Happy? Isn't
all day, every day. Yeah, all day, every day. Yeah. There you go.
All right, it's been lovely talking to you, Mr. Happy. Naturally, like, please follow him. I'll plug his socials in the description and the comments. But yeah, thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate it, and I'll see you in the distant future, I guess.
Sounds good. Hopefully not so distant future.
Okay, cool. I'm sure, like, given the lull, we'll have lots of things to talk about. So don't worry, we'll think of something. Yep. And you'll be back.
Absolutely.
For sure.
All right. And I have a podcast too that you might get an invite on.
Oh, please.
To,
yeah, I'm happy to. Yeah, please. Sure. All right. Thank you so much. Have a great stream and I'll see you soon. Take care, buddy.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one, man.
See ya. I hope you enjoyed the episode with Mr. Happy here. And if you did, do know you can also enjoy the ads-free, unedited and unfiltered version of this podcast episode on Patreon. Link is in the description. And speaking about Patreon subscribers, a big thank you to all the Patreons that you see on screen. Thanks for making this podcast possible. If you're looking for another 14 episode, you don't want to miss this episode I did with Arthas, a 2-hour-long conversation featuring banter with one of the best Final Fantasy 14 raiders in the world. Episode is in the middle of the screen, and I'll see you in the next video. Make sure to subscribe if you'd like to see more content.